mate.
We're going that again? We're going with that.
Yes, we are, Roberto, because you just cut me off earlier in the pre-show, so we're starting off that way. Yes, we are, sir.
All right,
yes,
all
we are. We are here to talk season 4, episode 5, chapter 44 of The House of Cards. How are you doing, Roberto?
Doing good. It's been a weird morning. Actually, it's funny. Even though we were supposed to record this earlier this week, I had some weird technical difficulties, and so we're recording a bit later.
Oh, that was my fault.
And it's okay. And between then and now, a video game came out that I've been literally playing all night long. But, you know, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about, of course, House of Cards. But there's somebody here. There's some guy.
Whoa,
yeah,
where did he come from?
Hi.
Hey, Jaime. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just chilling.
Yep.
You know. Just...
Okay. All right. That's great.
I heard there was a thing, so I showed up.
Yeah. You heard right because
it's a thing.
So before we kind
of
launch.
Can you sense all my anger of the technical troubles I had before this? Like letting it go. I'm finally letting it go.
So before we kind of go into talking about this week's episode, because I'm actually kind of curious, Jaime, how did you get into House of Cards? Like, what was your intro to it? Such a series? Was like the season one? Was it something else? Like, how did you hook into it all?
Actually, I got into it with the original British show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
You will have to be a reoccurring guest then, because we need to. We try hard to connect with that show. You know, but there's so much about the two shows that are similar but not similar, and and it's kind of like you have to be careful not to spoil the new show for people who are watching it for the first time.
Right.
Continue on.
It's completely different because it's based on the parliamentary system, and there's a lot of you know parliament stuff going on, but. It's the same because it's about power down deep inside and about, you know, unscrupulous people and kind of like the superpower that not having any morals kind of is, you know, it's if you have qualms, you are weaker than this monster person that can do whatever. So.
How do you watch the show? That's another question that we tend to ask is, do you binge it all at once when it comes out that week in February, the new U.S. version?
Yes. I'm incapable of watching one episode and not, you know, not clicking. So it's the way I watch it is if I start early, I do nothing that day. But if I start later, I don't sleep. so that's basically how
no matter what, if when the season comes out, you just say, all right, today it's February 25th. House of Cards is out. Click. Actually, it was 14th. It was, I think, Valentine's. Was it?
Right.
Or whatever day it was.
Last year it was on Valentine's Day. I know that because I remember tweeting. I may not have a Valentine, but I have House of Cards.
I have House of Cards, right.
But this year, I think it was March 4th.
Right. It's just like, oh, that's right. It was like right before South by. Yeah. That's right.
I don't start the second it comes out. I'm not like one of those guys, oh, I need to see this. But once I start, I just go.
I think the only show that I was like that with, refreshing like my you know the browser over and over was with Bob and David. But I'm a nut for Mr. Show. So
yeah, no. Anyway. No, the way it works with me is if I fall asleep, that's where I break. And I'll take it easy, and then I'll restart somewhere where I.
Well, we could start talking about the actual episode, and I think, again, we should start this off by, I kind of have to keep giving you nods, Roberto. And I think you can see now that I was really biting my tongue every time you said, I wish the show would do this, I wish the show would do that.
Well, because it's become apparent, and this is what now worries me, because of the news of a new showrunner and everything else. It's so funny watching this episode and seeing, you know, the best way I was saying in my head as I watched this episode was like, I can see the off ramp. The off ramp's right there. We can take that path. We can, you know, like every story, every good piece of fiction, if given the time to end itself, will end itself accordingly and correctly, you know?
Right.
And this week's episode, the one thing I noticed entirely as sort of this ongoing theme, I'm like, you're setting up all the things that need to happen to end this show in an interesting way. You know, you have this, you have, you know, Frank fighting desperately for life. You have everything coming out of what's his face's Lucas's, you know, pretty much suicide mission, you know, to take out Frank in his own, you know, with his own hands. And you start seeing all these pieces that are coming together that me as a person that watches shows and kind of understands the creative process can see this is how I think that they wanted to end it. Or they just didn't know. Again, the hard part is I don't know when those things get green lit, and maybe they don't get green lit as fast as we think they do. Or because again, when you watch this stuff, like, man, this is something you would save for like your last hurrah. You know, having that court case. The only problem I see happening, and we'll talk about this with Frank. We get kind of talking about all that stuff. Is I kind of see what season 6 could be about, and I don't look forward to a giant long season of the impeachment of Frank Underwood. Like that's the most boring. I think that's the most boring thing ever because no. Court trials are never done right on television. And if you're given a full season to do an entire court trial.
I don't think they'll do that. I think it will be the impending trouble, the potential danger in the background. But I think like real politicians, when stuff at home is a trouble, they find trouble elsewhere that they can be a hero by solving.
Yeah. So well, let's kind of talk about. Our main lead, Frank Underwood, who is currently
in La La Land.
The best way to put it, we tend to call that purgatory. Sometimes we tend to call that.
Ooh, bringing it back around, Roberto.
I mean, it is because he
we
is.
Had a whole, Jaime, we had a whole episode where we Roberto kind of really showed the comparison with Paradise Lost. It was great. It was good show. Go back and watch it.
We'll link to that in the show notes. It's an older episode, but it's interesting to see this happen because again, I like about it is that it's definitely like when they kick off the episode and it shows literally Frank's. I guess it was somebody. It was the reenacting actor who was playing his relative, but. For all intents purposes, it is his Civil War relative, that kind of thing.
Right.
I was like the minute I saw it, I'm like, oh, Frank's dying, or Frank is trying to is. I mean, yes, you could argue he's in his mind, he's hallucinating, but no, this is him. Like he is clinging to life, and he is now between whatever the next phase is for your spirituality. Again, whatever you believe, I'm not gonna preach that. But that's where we're at. Is he's in that? Because even near the end of the episode, it's like him in the woods, kind of just doing everything. It's like this is you could argue it's Frank's punishment. But I think it's if you're dying, even if you'd argue even if you don't necessarily believe in the afterlife, you could argue that your brain tries to figure it out in a weird dreamlike state, like the waking life as they call it sometimes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what's going on. And I tend to like, what did you take in this episode when it came to that? I mean, the whole thing, Jaime.
Okay. I'm a very big fan of Paradise Lost. I think it's one of the wonders of literature.
It is one of the best things Milton ever wrote. Next to Pagetica.
And here's the interesting thought. I think Frank is not human. I think he is he is a fallen angel of some sort in the sense that he's got all this power and again it comes from ruthlessness. So I think this particular dream world is him wrestling with humanity and regret and you know, he's given a chance to be human for a second, and then he's like, you know, no, this is
well, it's interesting. What's interesting about this? I mean, because ultimately the recurring thing we've been saying, and I've been saying throughout the entire history of this podcast, is that we're not following the protagonist of a story. We're following the antagonist of a story, following the villain. And that makes for a very, very different kind of writing and different kind of character. Because when you follow the protagonist, you do see some flaws, but you see them work through it. But typically when you have an antagonist, a story, a villain, you always have a tragic flaw where if they just turn, if they had just turned right, everything would be fine. And so because we're following kind of the enemy, the villain of the story, we have all these sort of things that would happen, these like tragic flaws that get amplified. They don't really get resolved or fixed because the villain doesn't view it as a tragic flaw. They just sort of have that as part of their existence. And like, again, what I liked about this is that we got to see a little, like you mentioned, we got to see a little more Frank's humanity. And when we do see that, it's always interesting. But
he faces his humanity, right? Frank is a little bit of a broken toy in some senses. You know, he looks like a person, and he should have feelings like a person, and he should get jealous like a person. But he doesn't. He does this. So I think he faces what his humanity should be and kind of, you know, rejects it and kind of, you know, denies it and moves on. But yeah, it's definitely a moment of reflection. And I think you're absolutely right. We are not following the story of a hero. We're sharing the story of a villain.
A villain, which makes again for very interesting. I mean, what's your take on the whole scene, Jackie? Like, do you think Frank is in purgatory? Do you think it's just all in his head that he's gonna? I mean, obviously you know further than me because I tend to watch, you know, episode per episode. But I mean, what's your take on this one?
He definitely is. He definitely is. And I don't know how much. See, this is the hard part about talking about the.
It's
yeah,
okay.
it's hard to talk about it and not go beyond the episodes, but I will just say that he really goes. He's in a really dark place. And I love this idea that Jaime brought up, that he's just this, you know, fallen angel type guy that he's not, like, when you really think about the character in that way, if we had a devil on Earth, would he not become president of the United States? Would he not be the guy that is becomes president without ever being elected?
Again, he's very like, and I stress this because, you know, we talked about it last time. We didn't, you know, Paradise Lost is that weird thing that, you know, kind of helped solidify the how modern Christianity views Satan and who he is. That's you know, it's not present in the Bible, but it's kind of helped solidify all that stuff. And so I'm you know, when I say all these words, this isn't, you know, I'm Roman Catholic. So understand that this is coming from an English major who's looking at Paradise Lost as a piece of literature and talking about that versus anything else. But within that story, the character of Satan, the devil, I mean, he has the fallen angel, the idea, but the idea, like, rather rule in, I forget the phrase.
I prefer to rule in hell than to be like a servant in heaven.
Servant in heaven, right. And so Frank is very much that. Like, there is very much a lot of very strong parallels to Satan as a character. And you know, not necessarily I'm always hesitant to call, like, Frank the devil because that has a certain connotation. That isn't what I'm trying to say, but he's very. There are a lot of those parallels to the character of Satan,
right.
To the fallen angel concept of here's a person that's just, you know, desperately it's sort of, you know, in his own ego and, you know, thinks he knows better than most, than all, and will do anything, and even this episode sort of starts revealing a lot of that stuff more and more, just how. You know, because I had almost forgotten about all the Zoe stuff. I remembered it in the back of my mind, of course, but I had almost fully forgotten about half of this stuff. And when you know, like I know we're going to talk, you know, talk about Stanford pretty soon, but like when they find the letter and it has all the information, and it's like I had forgotten about half this stuff. I'd forgotten how devious everything has gone on, and we should talk about that next. But so we're gonna talk about our sponsors right now before we get into talking about Mr. Doug Stamper. And that's, of course, our sponsor this week is 100tb.com. Of course, this is for our U.S. audience. Sorry, UK guys. But this is one of those awesome sponsors out there, one of those awesome kind of hosts. Yeah, usually when we get a sponsor of the British Tech Network, I tend to look at the service because I'm always intrigued by who sponsors us and, you know, kind of get a knowledge of the client. These guys are actually really cool. They have 100 terabyte CDNs for, like, really cheap overall. They offer things like virtual private servers, bare metal, like, stuff like that. And though the cost may look high to your typical, like, $5 hosting, if you really need power, if you need something like, well, I need a place where I can spin up VMs that are private, that are owned by me, this is the guys to go to. So head over to 100tb.com. We also have something else we need to promote, don't we?
Yes, I think we do. And by the way, Jaime, you
yes.
create so amazing things. And would you tell us a little bit about your project?
I'm starting it's basically a technology design studio. That's the idea. Working with some patents I have, and which include, you know, projects that I have put out in the past and will come back again, like the Holovect, and we're working on Mark II. However, last year, a good friend of ours, Brian Brushwood, has a small daughter. It's I believe 6 years old, and she and her friends asked me to kind of ask for a wish, and she asked me for a unicorn that would toot rainbows. I kind of played with it. I had some technology that I could apply to it, and I kind of did it as a joke. But it seems to like it. So we made this Internet of Things device that whenever you get a notification that you select
a unicorn,
and you like,
and I love
you know, it will toot out a rainbow, and so you can set it for hashtags, for mentions. If you're a Twitch user, you can set it for when your favorite streamers come live, and or if you are streaming yourself, when you get a subscription or a donation. We also have, you know, Facebook integration and Gmail. So it will look for specific text, like if you hit, or a specific person that sent you an email, if you get that email from, you know, that your tax return has come in or something like that, you know, out comes this little piece of joy kind of thing. So, you know, for example, right now it's very happily doing it because And then you know, you get a little notification that stays on until you actually, you know, touch it, and it goes away. Just so that you know.
Awesome! That is amazing. I didn't realize that back there would actually glow lights. That's
oh yeah.
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 Does
it,
that
it literally does toot rainbows as.
Yep.
We talked about this on a little bit on 8-Bit Life this past week. That episode should go live Monday for the audience out there. So if you're not a Patreon, but it's a really cool device. I'm actually really excited to see where this goes. We'll put a link to the actual project there in the show notes. There, it's actually an Indiegogo project. It's kind of a long.
And it's right here on the screen too.
That
helps. But go to our show notes.
That way you guys can check it out and hopefully if you have the money, get yourself one. Realize I don't know what, you know, and for those of you in the UK, it will be in dollars. There's shipping's always an interesting thing when you ship international, but I'm sure Jaime will figure.
Well, it's not terribly large, so it's something that
all pounds. Look, pound sterling, whether it be pound sterling or euros. I'm certain Jaime will take it.
Yeah. We'll you know, drachmas, anything.
Anything at that
also,
point.
in the show notes, you're going to have a special link where you can get a special little discount. It's not a very expensive device. I tried to make it as cheap as possible, but you get a little bit extra for watching this show on the British Tech Network.
Excellent, excellent. I'm actually extremely excited about this because this is like the tool I need. I used to use something. I was talking, I can't remember who it was with, maybe it was one of the Diamond Club shows, about a tool that, it was back in 2007, and it was I Want Sandy, and you would add this person to your email, so when you wrote something in your email, it would all medically set up calendar dates and things, but I really need this tool in so many ways. So
yeah, no.
Make my life so much more productive.
Again, what started as a little girl's wish, we've discovered that it's a very interesting thing because it kind of makes the internet become a real object around you, and there's some beautiful sounds that come with, you know, you can have five or six notifications with different events, and they have different sounds. It's an interesting thing. Right? We're having a blast.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so let's get back into the show, and then I want to plug some other stuff too that some of our people.
Yeah,
are
we'll
doing,
talk about that.
But we'll do that at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do the post because it's time to talk about my favorite crazy man,
Stamper?
Doug Stamper.
Oh, I love Stamper so much.
There are things that I love the most, and I can, you
Do you
know, it's
think
funny.
He was going to kill Seth.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. If he didn't have to, if he didn't have to deal with the idea of, well, Seth's last known location was coming to my apartment, and weird things like that, and like having to explain what the heck happened to their press secretary. Oh yeah, he'd be gone.
Yeah.
This is, you know. There are only two characters that have kills under their belts, at least, you know, that we know of, and that's Frank and that's Doug. It's so funny, you know. We're talking about last week, like loyalty and Seth and everything else. It was so funny. It's so funny to see Stamper get unhinged because it's like when you see Frank get unhinged, you know.
Mm. Yes.
And man, was that. There are moments in the show when I'm just like, when it happens, I'm just like, I know you're not going to do it because you can't get rid of the body that quickly. But that was, it was such a great line. Like, well, if I can't get your loyalty, I'm going to get your obedience, and just like literally putting him within an inch of losing his life. I'm just like, I'm so like, yes.
And then,
it was crazy.
And then he hands him the glass. He's like,
That is what I love about Doug Stamper, is that he will get things done. He will do it his way. And gosh darn it, is when he, like, him and Frank, when they're both unhinged, they're unhinged. And I that's something that I really like as a character. I mean, what's your take, Jackie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This was so strange, interaction with Seth, because at the moment, I think when I originally watched it, I thought, he can't. I knew he could not kill Seth. He did not have anything set up to, like, if Stamper's going to kill you,
we've learned that Stamper, you know, we learned from like last season when Stamper wants to kill.
Right.
He knows how to set things up to make sure that there is no evidence, that they're, you know, for the most part, try to get rid of all the loose ends he can. This is the one loose end that Lucas is the one loose end that no one saw at all, which is interesting how blindsided they got by this guy, which basically makes me think that they should just, you know, nix him. But, you know, we saw last season, he buys literally a van for parts in cash without a title, with no marker, you know, wearing gloves with no markers whatsoever, like torches at everything when he went to kill Rachel. So I knew that he wasn't going to kill him because he didn't have all those things set up, and Seth is a little too high high visibility of a target, for lack of better words. I mean, what did you think of that whole scene, Jaime?
Stamper is kind of like the perfect weapon. And you know, he is Frank's perfect weapon. And I think that Frank being out of reach kind of makes him, you know, wild and he could do crazy, silly, stupid things. So anything could happen. I was terrified the whole time. I think that the idea of you're going to obey is also a very strong theme of this series. It's you know, it happened with the state. What is it? The lady who's the head of the State Department.
Durant, Kathy Durant.
Yes. Kathy Durant did the same thing. Oh, I'm going to do whatever I want. And then, you know, Frank is like, no, you're going to do what I say. Because, yeah. Not because, you know, I'm going to, no, because you're going to freaking die painfully. And
this is Frank's world. We're all just living in it.
Right. And Stemper's doing the same thing here. It's like in his realm, it's like, no, you know what? I don't need to kill you. I can just make you poop your pants every time.
Well, because it was such a like I almost thought we went to.
Go ahead, go. You know, I think for me, I almost a little bit go.
No, it's okay. I almost thought that he in that scene, because like the minute he starts like not filling the glass of water, I'm like, oh, what is he doing? And then he's like, I know he's playing him, but what is his end game?
He's not getting ice.
He's not getting ice, and just like what is his end game? I know he's got an end game because this is what Stamper does, and I'm like, there's something going on.
Like,
and
what
I
is
almost
going
thought,
through this man's brain? He's
well,
in
no,
the
no.
Thinking,
I almost
I could take a glass, and then maybe I'll stick it over his face. And well, he's see, that's thinking
that,
all this,
at first.
And you're,
I thought he was literally going
to
beat
clueless
the
as to what
loving.
Yeah, you break it over his head.
That's what I thought. That's exactly what I thought. They was just going to, you know, beat him to a bloody pulp. but the minute he starts choking, I'm like, oh, man. I almost was like, I know you're not going to kill him. But I'm like, man, if only he could do this. Because he – when he first, you know, found out it was Seth, he again, him unhinged is great, and it was just this like get the heck out of here. You know, there's the word choice that he had. We can't say this on this show because we're a family friendly show. But man, was that was like
I loved that. I loved Seth's reaction. He said, "Man, you're effed up." Like, and as he walked out,
he is, and it was so cool, just like him choking him, like with that taking it, it's like, do some water, man, just like what?
And then, you know, Stamper needed the water. He just almost tried to kill a guy by suffocating him. So yeah, you're gonna need some water. You need to rehydrate yourself after that.
Because again, that's Stamper doesn't. Stamper doesn't mess around, and
right.
We've learned over the course of the series that Stamper doesn't mind getting his hands dirty, doesn't mess around, and if you dare, you know, like, you know, for, if Frank is the king of the castle, and you know, if Frank is King Arthur, and of course, you know, Stamper is Sir Lancelot. If you dare threaten the king.
Yeah,
there is no, you know, gloves are off, and it's so cool to see him. You know, they still has this. You know, because again, we, you know, this whole episode, he was put on his back foot. Like, he saw the letter, and it had Rachel in there, had Doug Stamp, had everything there, and it's like, you know, he has to almost relive it again because he had, you know, the way we had kind of pictured him was that at the end of season three, him killing Rachel was him sort of burying his past and trying to. You know, a very literal, you know, sever point. Now he has to relive it again, and it's only going to get worse. And it's crazy to see all this happen.
Again, there's some interesting themes that run throughout the series, and I think in this episode they kind of get manifested. And one of them is again that ruthlessness is a superpower, and you know, it allows these characters to do things that, you know, normal humans can't do, and one of them is, oh yeah, I'll threaten your life and you know, threaten to cause very uncomfortable pain to you, but I'll drink my water afterwards. The other thing that's interesting is, and again, it's that complete ruthlessness. The other thing that's interesting is you see how dependent on Frank's temper is. You know,
yeah.
Frank sets the tone, you know, establishes the path very clearly for him. And when he doesn't have that guidance, he suffers of two things. One is he doesn't know what to do exactly. And two, he feels that everybody's going to come after him. You know, he has lost a protector. And that's the way politics works. You know, you might not like the guy you work for or the guy who's your boss or whatever, but you kind of are under his cone of protection. And you know, if he does better, you do better. So you know, it's a little bit of an example of what would happen if Frank actually, you know, goes missing. It all hell would break loose very quickly.
So we should probably move. Speaking of, sorry, go ahead, Jackie.
No, yeah, that's the thing. And so it's really funny to me that Seth is like so willing to just kind of, man, you're messed up, and I'm being, you know, and then walk away, and he's going to still continue working with this guy.
Of course, he is.
Can you think about this world that is created around Frank that is so bizarre? Claire's in control,
right.
And then she's got her own stamper who puts that pressure onto Remy, who blackmailed her about Jackie. And then, like, there's so many elements to this episode that were so great that we will never be able to cover. But how do you think we should – if there's anything we're going to miss about this show, because I know we're missing several elements, but Roberto,
yeah, we'll talk – yeah, because the whole Claire thing. I think – I mean, out of all this episode, I think the things that I liked the most and the overarching theme, even with Claire kind of going, you know – going against sort of Frank's sort of wishes, if you will, trying to spin it where, again, I don't know if she's spinning it in the way where she's going to ruin this man or not ruin this man as president, because there's so many ways it could spin down. I mean, the big problem with Claire is that she has a thing against the Russian guy. Because
Petrov,
Petrov.
And she brings in the people that she knows are Chinese. She basically is really bringing in the Chinese. She is really playing – she is president. Because she's playing the Chinese against the Russians because
But the thing is that Petrov knows it. And the problem I think – the problem I think Claire's having – I think this is where everything kind of comes down in this episode. And I think that this is what becomes very apparent is that all politics is personal in the end of it all, because ultimately I think if Claire was thinking straight, she wouldn't be doing this. But because she's trying to figure out how is it that she can be president, you know, and do this, because a part of me goes and says, you know, why bring, you know, because Tusk comes back for a half second, which is like the one character I was like, really, he's coming back? Why is he coming back? Must we go down that pathway?
When I watch this now, all I keep thinking is, what is Roberto thinking right now, seeing this, you know?
Well, because it's like, why must we bring back this character? You know, this character had a really cool exit point. We don't need to have him again, because it's just like, I like the idea.
He's back.
But it's very
even the dead are back right now. Zoe's back. Yeah. Rachel's
right.
back.
Yeah. It's like everything's kind of coming full circle. And to me, it almost feels like with Claire is that she would like nothing more than to stick it to Petrov's, you know, face, because Petrov is the reason why she is where she is. You know, because she had her own strategy, her own plan, you know, become ambassador, even though she had really no business being ambassador. She had no business being in the UN, just because not because she couldn't be eventually. It's just she wasn't skilled. She didn't have the ability to do so. And now here she is able to control, essentially pull
Who's
her
really in control of this house of cards.
Well, it's
and I also want to know what Jaime thinks too. So yeah, good. No, you finish up, Roberto.
I'll say my last thoughts. It almost feels like season one all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. Well, what's your opinion, Jaime?
I saw the original British version first, and Zoe's situation, let's say, is very important to that storyline. I think that they are revisiting these events because they probably are going to arc to a similar place. And to give you an idea, the British series of series was kind of short. It was, I think, three different series, and this is going on to five and maybe six. So I think they are trying to coincide a little bit. I think that this is the main antagonist. This story, this notion is the main antagonist. I don't think it's going to be something that is going to blow up in Frank's face right now, but I think it will eventually. And so they're keeping, the story's keeping it in your mind and keeping you aware that, that these events have repercussions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm kind of thinking, like, who is the story about? Just because Frank is the one who breaks the fourth wall, is this a Frank story? Or
who knows? I mean, we'll time will tell. And of course, bringing back the editor into it and having him have to wrestle with all this, it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I will do that. I'll make that my goal to look up the new showrunner and find some of their work before.
Because that will be the telling point for me. Because again, I watching this episode, because I don't think it's not been announced. Has it been announced that we're having a new season or not? I mean, we have a new showrunner, so I guess there's going to be a new season.
Yes, but no, we'll have
because it's so funny.
More season and a new showrunner. So the original creator of House of Cards, Bo Williams, who did the UK show, is going to be out.
Because it's so funny watching this,
but
and seeing,
yeah, go ahead.
It's fun watching this episode and seeing the telegraph marks of here is how we could have ended the series, and it would have been a good, I can see where the solid ending would happen, but because it's a new showrunner and because I don't quite know if, well, maybe they'll just, have Frank completely collapse and have all the Underwoods go away and just sort of make it part of House of, make a show that's in the House of Cards universe or just call it like that or something along those lines.
With Jackie in charge.
with anybody. It doesn't matter, because as we start to learn within the series, like Hyman was saying, this is just politics in the world of House of Cards. I'm not saying it's this real, yes, there's parallels to our real world and everything else like that, but I'm always hesitant to say that because, it's a work of fiction. But this is the universe of politics in House of Cards. This is how it works. And it doesn't matter who's in charge. It doesn't matter who's doing what. It's ultimately going to be the same thing. And we start to see all that with the Underwood. So who knows? Again, I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, we will. Jaime, I would want to say what's your final thoughts on the season and all that. But actually, now knowing that you did go, you loved the original British season, we're just going to have you back on.
Oh,
yeah, we'll just have you back on.
Definitely. In the future. So we'll do that. And so I guess we should just kind of wrap it up, right?
Yeah, we're done. I mean, there's nothing else. We don't have anything else to plug, do we? We're like, there's no big.
No, there might be something.
There's no big award thing going on, right?
No. And a lot of faithful followers of the British Tech Network would be interested in this too. There's many categories. It is the Podcast Awards.
Yeah,
that started today. It started on the 15th. As far as nominations,
exactly.
And you guys, there's a huge crossover between us. We love you, the Diamond Club, and the British Tech Network. And boy, let's get some awards out here. There's some technology categories. Certainly the Big Show, the Mac Show could be a big part of that. There's
sure.
a Gamer Show. So the Game Show on the British Tech Network, definitely something I would nominate. And Roberto, you've got a few shows. I don't care what you say. I'm going to nominate you for, particularly for TV and film, cinematography. And you've got some other shows.
Here, here.
We're shooting for getting 8-Bit Life there in the entertainment section as a nomination, just because it's my longest running podcast. It's got the most recent episodes, and it's got a bit more of a pedigree in the end of it all. That because again, all the nominations go through like a committee, and so that has a large back catalog that can be analyzed and looked at and everything about it.
Funny that I clicked on your screen to bring up Cosmic Radio TV, where we can take a look at Yeah. It's called 8-Bit Life, and it pops up at my show. You record it with me.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But you actually record episodes with brilliant people, including Jaime, and Tom Merritt is there. Like, I mean, this show.
I've had the entire run of the internet gamut in various forms and fashions, and again, there's a big back catalog. If you're new to House of Cards and you've been listening to the show and you tend to like the sound of my voice or how I tend to approach things. And you want to watch something a little bit more mature. I say mature in terms of, like, I do, you know, this is family friendly. 8-Bit Life is really not quite family friendly. But if you want to ever hear me kind of interview just really interesting kind of internet people in general, or just sort of have it's the way I pitch it, it's a conversational podcast in general. Head over to CosmicRadioTV/8BitLife. And on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/CosmicRadioTV, we actually have a video kind of saying all the details. If you want to help nominate 8-Bit Life for a podcast award.
I'm going to go ahead and
Sure.
Is that good?
It's awesome.
Are you guys ready to watch a video? I want to watch a video.
Yeah, let's watch it.
So you've put this up recently.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Roberto Villegas here. Today is the day. Now is the time. The podcast award nominations are officially live. And my podcast, my so-called 8-Bit Life, desperately needs your help to get a nomination. So here's how it works. Very simple, very easy. Head over to podcastawards.com. You'll see this sort of form-like thing with all different categories and everything else. Go ahead and click towards the entertainment section and input the following relevant information. Podcast name, which is my so-called 8-Bit Life, and the URL being cosmicradio.tv/8BitLife. Feel free to put us wherever you see fit, though we're trying to shoot for the entertainment, but we may belong in comedy or may belong in mature. We don't quite know, but we do want to sort of target entertainment as our vector point. But that does not mean that we don't belong elsewhere. If you want to nominate us for mature, I am not going to stop you because, heck, any nomination works for me. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope to see you all at the Podcast Awards.
Excellent. I love that. I love that piece you put together. All right, guys. Jaime, again, where exactly do you want people to find this beautiful work that you're doing right now?
Well, the easiest thing to do, I think, is to follow at Toots the Unicorn. Yes, Toots tweets out. He had a very fun time on National Unicorn Day. It was fantastic. So it's at Toots with a Z, TOOTZ, the Unicorn, on Twitter. And, you know, in Indiegogo, again, you have a link, but it's Toots the Unicorn as well. And if you follow the link that is in the show notes, you will get a special discount. You know, I'm at TensorGuy, TONSORGUY. There's always fun stuff there, and stay tuned. Mark, the Holovec Mark II is coming up, and that's going to be interesting. I think y'all are going to like it.
Excellent. I'm Jackie Hearn at JackieHearn81. Follow me on Twitter. I'm going to be announcing some stuff later, but you know, whatever. That's good enough. Guys, Jaime, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. This was awesome.
We really should dedicate having. That's why you're coming back.
We'll get you back on in the future.
My pleasure. Man.
Okay. All right. Until next time. Bye.
Take care, people.
Cheerio, mates.
You always are the mates. At least you're not using any other words that are a bit more vitriol.
Like what, governor?